Hey, everybody, this is Tom Salemi of Device Talks. Welcome back to Device Talks Weekly. I'm here again with Device Talks Managing Editor Kayleen Brown. Kayleen, we're going to see each other in just a couple of days. It's exciting.
Oh, I can't wait. I feel like I've seen more of you this year than I have in the last few years. So this has been the best 2025.
Yeah, you made a nice trip out to Boston for a planning session. And of course, we now have two meetings in the first half of the year, Minnesota and Boston. So yeah, this has been a banner year for the Device Talks team getting together. But next week we'll be at MedTech Vision. We hope to see lots of folks there. Anything popping out at you on the agenda?
I mean, I know how excited I am for the full agenda, but I'm really looking forward to the executive interview with Dr. Lori Mowry, the Senior Vice President and Chief Scientific Officer at Medtronic. And then, of course, at the end of the day, they always honor the Farrell & Powell Award. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking forward to learning who the recipient of that each year. I mean, it's always a powerful story and an incredible female leader. So I have no doubt that this year is going to be somebody to remember for sure. Can't
Absolutely.
Wait.
No, that is always a great presentation and always a great speech by the recipient. Looking forward to the energy that brings. I'm excited about the panel as well. There's an opening AI panel, which I know AI is a hot topic these days. But really excited to hear from Gretchen Brown. She is she's VP of Chief Nursing Information Officer for Stanford Healthcare. And I personally always just learn a lot when you actually hear from someone on the front line of care. So there's a lot more to the agenda. Folks can go to medtechwomen.org to see the agenda. And it's a day well spent. So looking forward to seeing everyone there. Of course, to hang with you, Kayleen Brown. We're going to do some fun MedTech nerd stuff as well. Drive around, check out the sites. Lots of MedTech things to see in that neck of the woods. So let's get cracking on this here podcast. I will be speaking with Valeska Schroeder. She's the CEO of Serapeutics, and Serapeutics has a cool ortho spine bone growth material that Valeska will be able to explain a lot better than I will. But we talk about spine. We've been talking a lot more about the hard stuff, the metal stuff. This is a new approach to helping with fusion and to helping with bone growth. Valeska's been on the engineering side, on the investing side, and now she's got a role running a company. So great conversation with Valeska Schroeder, who will be at MedTech Vision. So that'll be our keynote conversation. Who is our FOMO this week, Kayleen Brown?
Well, I had the pleasure of sitting down with Certiq Medical's head of engineering and technology, Ashish Dividia. So Ashish has been within the industry for decades and is actually a fellow anteater. So he and I graduated from the same university. So we're now best friends forever, obviously. But Ashish and I, we sit down and we talk about the future of smart catheters, which is really interesting. So he's a vested interest and we talk about the near and long-term future of what that can look like. And here's a hint, it's not just about getting smaller. There's more to it. So I can't wait for everybody to tune in on that.
That's fantastic. And my laughter, of course, I've just never heard anyone identify as an anteater before. So
hey, I'm proud of it. Zot, zot, Tom.
Oh my God, zot, zot. Love it.
We're not known for our sports teams, so we didn't need to have a really impressive mascot. But we have a great biomedical and biomechanical engineering program, so I think that saves us. So anteaters and zot, zot all the way. Thank you very much.
Zot, zot, indeed. Let's get this podcast started. We're going to kick everything off with Chris Newmarker, executive editor of Mass Device, and his Newmarker's Newsmakers. All right, you ready for this?
Ready.
Chris Newmarker, how are you, sir?
Doing well, Tom, doing well. And I just noticed you're wearing like a blue shirt and here, I've got my like gray sweatshirt on, but look, I mean, wow. We're just on the same wavelength on
podcast with someone for 4 or 5 years, you begin to think alike and you know, same mannerisms. So This is a full relationship we got going on here, Chris.
We're two styling dudes. I mean, that's
we got
taste. It's good. Yeah.
I think I'm gonna wear blue today. That ought to rock the world. Guys never wear blue t-shirts.
Yeah. I mean, you know, what would be good to go along with being a podcaster? I've got my blue t-shirt or my green hoodie, I can just wear this every day. I should just have a closet full of them. I mean,
so have the little ones started school yet?
They have, yes. Yeah. I believe that our school district is moving earlier in future years, but this year we still got to start school right after Labor Day, which feels nice.
What are the grades again? Alex is what, fourth? No, what is it?
Yeah. Yeah. My oldest Alex.
Really?
Fourth grade. And then our twins are in first grade. So, yeah.
Wow.
My gosh.
They're all into it.
Yeah, they're all
toward middle school too. This is happening.
Man.
Stuff's getting real, Stuff's getting
time flies
real.
By. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, that's great. And did you guys hit the fair after all?
We did get to the fair. So, yeah. This will be a bit of a downer, but I read that even though the weather was nice, that fair attendance was down, which they sometimes say is an economic indicator. There's been a bit of inflation. Just to get a small thing of fried cheese curds at the fair costs $10 now.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know. So, yeah. So at least as far as that, I think the Federal Reserve should follow the Minnesota State Fair more. The fair index, rose corn, is that expensive?
How much is the fried dough? Let's turn that to the consumer price index.
Yeah, get the mini donut index going.
Well, I'm sorry the attendance was down, but as an attendee, I'm sure you didn't mind so much having
that was
fewer people
good.
Around.
We stumbled into the arena at one point and saw cow judging, which was kind of fascinating.
The cow was judging you, or
they were judging. They had young people leading their cows through to judge the poise and presentation of the cattle, including they had the winner and they bring her up with her cow, and then they had these little doing these things. I'm like, they must do that to make the cow look up into the camera.
Wow.
If you're gonna get your picture with your prize cow, you need it's gotta be a good shot of that cow's gotta really be looking at the camera, looking poised,
I'm gonna pay these fair prices, I want to see cow agility. I want cows running around cones and jumping.
I would love that.
Things like the border collies do. I think we got to get on that.
They had to have had that at some point. That would have been great.
Cow
leaping. Yeah.
All right.
Mooing contest. See if you get a moo count.
Let's try to keep our listeners by.
They're just like, why did I make this mistake? Why did I?
So,
wow.
What are this week's New Markers newsmakers, Chris?
The New Markers newsmakers of the week. All right. Well, number five on the list. We just recently had, just over last weekend, the ESC Congress in Madrid, the European Society of Cardiology, and just a ton of news coming out from, a host of medical device companies. I mean, you got Abbott, Edwards Life Sciences, Medtronic, and senior editor Sean Wuhuli has a whole roundup on Mass Device of all of the top news out of that conference, which is one of the top cardiology conferences that we see every year. But everything from an expanded CE mark for Abbott's Navitor TAVI system to Edwards discussing new aortic valve repair guidelines, and some positive data for their EVOQUE. So just a really good roundup that I'd recommend people check out.
And I noticed you've got an item from GE Healthcare regarding their new AI-powered cardiac tech. Mm-hmm. Caught my eye because I know that'll be a topic of conversation on our new GE Healthcare podcast that'll be coming out. That'll be hosted by Device Talks Managing Editor Kayleen Brown.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Folks can make sure you subscribe to the Device Talks Podcast Network so you don't miss that conversation.
Really, really that's just one of the most fascinating parts of our industry right now is how they're trying to package different AI features into imaging technology. So, that's going to be riveting. Really, that'll be awesome.
Absolutely. All right, let's roll on to number four, Chris Neumacher.
All right. Well, number four on the list. This is hot off the presses from the site Globes in Israel. There's a report that Sean covered a bit on Unmasked Device. There's a report that Edwards Life Sciences has agreed to acquire the remaining stake in Vectorious Medical Technologies, which Vectorious is the maker of the VLAP, a left atrial pressure sensor. So Sean has some messages out to Edwards to see if we can get some more details. But if this report is accurate, I mean, this looks like this will be another nice tuck-in acquisition for Edwards Life Sciences.
Yeah, fascinating space. The sensors, of course. Abbott's got his CardioMEMS, and Adana Medical, a Shifa Med company, is working on cardiac sensors as well. And we will have Brian Fahey, the CEO at Device Talks West, looking at the article that Sean Hooley wrote about Vectorious Medical last year when it had its first U.S. patient. It said the patient received the VLAP sensor, which enables the remote monitoring of the heart and congestion status. So it also allows for self-adjustment of diuretics. So
wow.
Huge. I mean, huge.
That'd be great.
Just game-changing. So good to see Edwards out there still looking for new tech to buy. So
great news. Yeah, look, it sounds like Vectorious had the first implant of the VLAP in the United States last year. So the technology is moving forward. So that's awesome.
And for those Googling out there, it is Vectorious, not Victorious. V-E-C.
Vectorious, exactly. Yes. And definitely not to be confused with Vicarious Surgical.
Not Vicarious, so. Yep.
No. Yeah, Vectorious, exactly. Yeah. All right. Cool. Number three on the list, we've got Cardium. We got a new entrance to the pulsed field ablation space here in the United States. We've got Cardium winning a PMA from the FDA for its Globe pulsed field ablation system. And I know that you had a really good discussion last year with Cardium CEO Kevin Chaplin. Mm-hmm. I recall a Device Talk, we've had so many great Device Talks events over the years. It's a blur now, but I remember a past event where we had, I believe it was Cardium's a co-founder there discussing the whole journey.
Device Talks West last year, that's right.
Device Talk, exactly. That was a really great presentation, just going over all the different iterations of the Globe over the years and, you know, the things that worked and things they had to go back and, you know, like and tweak and do work with. And I mean, it's been a journey to get here, but here they are. They've, you know, won approval for the system.
And it's just amazing to me that these companies keeping them. I think we're out to what, 7 or 8 now, atrial fibrillation companies using pulse field ablation. And now we've got Stephen Michelson, the founder, of course, of Farapulse, which kind of got this all going. He is looking on the ventricular side with Field Medical, and he'll be presenting at Device Talks West on October 15th about Field Medical's intentions and about what he sees as the future of PFA. So he's certainly somebody
he's gonna be great
to listen to.
He's definitely one of the big pioneers in the space, and you know the fact that he got Farapulse going, which is Boston Scientific's PFA system now, and that's just going to be great. It's going to be fascinating. I mean, I saw him at a past panel that I hosted at Device Talks, and that's just going to be just fascinating to hear his insights. And you know, he has that great ability too, that you know he really he tells it how it is, it's just awesome.
One of the most colorful people in medtech, and I mean that in a very good way. I mean,
good way, yeah.
We'll have him on the podcast in a couple of weeks, but he did not attend, he dropped out of high school, did not attend college until his late 20s, was in a band for a lot of that time in between, then started working at a hospital to pay the bills and just fell in love with healthcare, but also specifically with interventional cardiology. So I think that time away sort of gives him a fresher perspective on things that can be done, and he did it with Farapulse, and I got a feeling that we're going to be having a similar conversation about Field Medical in a couple of years, that it sort of blazed a new trail. So really cool guy.
Awesome.
happy to, looking forward to meeting him finally at Device Talks West.
I was just saying, you were just going over the whole agenda for West with our editorial team over at Mass Device at MDO. And I honestly said, like, if I was not associated at all with the show, I would be like, I want to be in that show.
I think we got Tim Schmidt, Ray Cohen, we got Josh Macau, we got Anna's Dwar, we've got Telesurgery, we've got Aman Jetty from Intuitive at the very end. It's crackerjack. So I hope folks on the West Coast, if you need to be convinced, reach out to me or Chris on LinkedIn, and we'll see what we can do to get you to attend, because it's going to be a great couple of days and always a great event. I'm looking forward to seeing everybody on the West Coast.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll stop talking about this before people get an NPR membership drive feeling. Like, by the way, like, any of you register.
No tote bags to offer.
No tote pad. No CD mix. No. I need some Device Talks merch, Tom. How many years do I have to say that, man?
I know. The merch team is working on it. They're still trying to develop the patterns, and such.
It's taken longer than to get a medical device designed. I mean, my gosh. That's a long time sometimes. Anyway, number two on the list. I mean, we have the former CEO of Shockwave Medical, Doug Godshall. Did I pronounce that right, Tom? All right, I did. All right, yeah. I mean, his new thing is Galvanized Therapeutics, which he's the CEO of. As they just raised $100 million. Just to remind, most people should know this, but Shockwave Medical, I mean, acquired for $13.1 billion by Johnson & Johnson MedTech last year. So, I mean, just a really successful exit for him there. And now, he's running Galvanize, which has some really interesting pulsed electric field technology to treat solid tumors. So we're seeing more of these like alternative ways to treat cancer versus, the standard old trio of surgery, radiology, chemo. Like, I mean, there's some really, really exciting things going on in the oncology space right now. And, Galvanize is one of those companies with some really interesting technology.
Yeah, I posted about it on LinkedIn. Jonathan Waldstreicher, Dr. Jonathan Waldstreicher, is the founder of Galvanize, actually merged three companies into one to form Galvanize. And super smart guy. I got to know him a bit when he was at AppleTree, and he helped on a conference that I organized centered around respiratory innovation that we did with the American Thoracic Society. And I thought Galvanize was a really cool company before it had raised $100 million from Fidelity and Intuitive and Gilmartin. And then, as I said in my post, like, bringing Doug Godshall into Galvanize is like strapping a Saturn V rocket to this thing. It's just going to take off with his track record with Heartware, which was a big question mark. And obviously didn't end well after the acquisition. But, this is MedTech, and these things happen. But they did help some patients prior to what happened. But then Shockwave, I mean, that... Shockwave is not a certainty when Doug Godshall joined. It wasn't a foregone conclusion. There was a lot of skepticism, a lot of feeling that it wasn't necessary. And Doug, as he said, it just has that a knack, or his shtick, he says, is for bringing companies, med tech companies, that kind of get to a certain point where they need to really go mainstream and tell the bigger story. That's where his sweet spot is. So I think this is going to be, feels to me like a Shockwave story, and you're right about oncology and devices. It's really exciting to see all these surgical robotics companies and other companies moving into providing alternative care for cancer, things that don't make you sick, things that don't destroy your whole body, things that are precise and delivered carefully. I think that's very needed, and I think it's better care, and it's an exciting time for MedTech. So,
very great, much so.
Great news all around. So,
yeah.
Definitely a worthy number two.
And number one on the list is we have Solventum, which used to be 3M Healthcare, got spun out independently. They completed their $4.1 billion sale of their purification and filtration business to Thermo Fisher and Scientific. And pays down a good chunk of debt for them, kind of gets them more focused. Gets them into that place now where they can kind of innovate and grow. I mean, who knows? Maybe we'll see some tuck-in M&A going on. Going to be really interesting. They have Brian Hansen as their CEO, who did some great work boosting Zimmer Biomet. Uh-huh. That device talks Minnesota. Hans's chief strategy over at ZB, Rachel Ellingson's moved over to Solventum as well as their chief strategy officer. So just a really, really kind of, it's going to be exciting to see how this goes. It's based here in the Twin Cities. They're going to be, they're moving out of 3M's campus into a renovated headquarters that they're getting ready down in Eagan, which is in the south part of the metro. So we'll have to stop by at Solventum headquarters when we do our MedTech Nerd
Tour. I was going to say, do you think it'll be ready by next spring?
I think it might be ready. Well, I don't know. We'll see.
We got Device Talks Minnesota May 4th, everybody. We'll be back at the McNamara Alumni Center. And it's going to be hard to top last year, but we'll do our best. It was a great start and really happy to be back. It's going to be our first Device Talks event of 2026. So we'll be at Device Talks Minnesota on May 4th. Yeah. And then Device Talks Boston is later that month on May 27th and 28th. So
we'll be busy.
Let's go. And hopefully catch another Twins game. Maybe they won't get their butts kicked this time around.
There we go. Yeah, they'll hopefully, exactly right. Hopefully they did trade away half the team, it seemed like.
Because of that game we were at when they lost 19 to whatever, who knows. But anyway,
The Polad family says they're sticking with ownership of the team. So maybe, who knows, maybe we'll get this thing going again here. So I got a nice discount on a Twins t-shirt at the fair. So there we go. I'll have a new t-shirt next year, Tom. So good deal.
That's the best way to measure the popularity is how big a discount you're getting on there.
50% discount. That's a great. I'm sure there was like an event in Boston. The Red Sox are
not offering discounts this year.
No discounts this year. Right.
Yeah. All right, cool. Christian Becker. Great list of the new Marcus Newsmakers. Thanks for updating everybody.
It's always fun, man. Catch you around.
All right. Thanks again, Chris Newmarker. Before we roll on with this podcast episode, Kayleen Brown, I want to remind folks that they should meet us in Santa Clara at Device Talks West on October 15th and 16th. If they use the code DTWeekly25, they can save 25%. And if they're in the mood for a webinar, we've got a webinar led by Biomerics coming up this Tuesday on Device Talks Tuesdays. Go to devicetalks.com. to check out the program. It's called Quick Turn Prototyping, Bridging the Gap Between Innovating and Manufacturing. All right, Kayleen Brown. Now let's introduce this week's FOMO interview on Device Talks Weekly.
I bring you Ashish Dividia, Head of Engineering and Technology for Surgic Medical, talking about smart catheters. Enjoy. Ashish Dividia, Head of Engineering and Technology for Surgic Medical. Thank you so much for joining us on the Future of MedTech Opportunities, a segment as part of Device Talks Weekly.
Thank you for having me, Kayleen.
So we're going to talk through smart catheter innovation. So what is your connection to smart catheter innovation, your background, your history? Catch me up.
I'm an electrical engineer by training, and I got my master's and PhD in biomedical engineering from UC Irvine. And right after I graduated from UC Irvine, I joined Surtec Medical as an R&D engineer. For people who are not very familiar with Surtec Medical, we are one of the global leaders in design, development, and manufacturing of Class 2 and Class 3 devices, specializing in active implantables, interventional devices, and precision components.
Ashish, it's very obvious to me that we were kindred spirits from the beginning, but I had no idea that I was speaking to a fellow anteater. So zot, my friend.
It's your mind.
When we are talking about smart catheter innovation, I think it's really important to take it back and really talk through the challenges that we're facing. So I understand the goal, but can you help us understand, like, what do those challenges look like and what are we facing?
Sure. So For the broader audience who may not know exactly what smart catheters are or to define them better, I define a smart catheter as a specialized type of a catheter-based product or an interventional product that incorporates miniaturized electronics, sensors, or other advanced technologies within a catheter-based device. like I spoke earlier, it could be for diagnostics, it could be for energy delivery, or it could be for any other therapeutic application. Typically, these devices, enable real-time data monitoring, transmission, enhanced diagnostic accuracy, or improve, therapeutic innovations that we're trying to deliver through these procedures. So that's how I define smart catheters. By the virtue of them being more complex and you're trying to integrate all these different functions into small catheters, the biggest challenge that I see is integration of the mechanical piece, the electronics, the firmware, and the software that comes with it. Typically, we are dealing with sometimes small signals, and so signal-to-noise ratio can be a problem. Electrical isolation of signal can be a problem, and if we are delivering energies, electrical safety can also be a potential challenge. So, to me, the biggest challenge with smart catheters, as I see right now, is the system-level integration. How do we bring different methodologies from other areas into the catheter world so we can enable this electromechanical innovation and get those smart catheters out to the market?
Those challenges are definitely not minor. So have we made any progress thus far? I mean, what technical advances or achievements have brought us today to today's smart catheter? So at least we can understand that.
Sure. So, I mean, just the catheters by itself, there's a lot of work that's been done in miniaturizing the catheters. There was a time when a 6-wrench catheter used to be quite challenging. Now, as we navigate through the neurovascular applications and the neurovascular market, microcatheters or sub-8-wrench catheters are becoming more of the norm. So that's definitely helpful from catheter manufacturing perspective. Also, the advances in electronic packaging, also flex circuits and manufacturing of electrical circuits and electrical components has definitely allowed us to put electronics in more flexible packages, more foldable packages that allows them to be integrated at the tip of the catheter more easily than, let's say, a decade or two ago. And the third thing is, I think a lot of advances in soldering and welding equipment and the innovation there allows us to integrate or attach very, very small wires. I mean, sometimes you're talking about as small as 40 gauge wires that need to be attached and soldered and routed. And we still have to worry about isolation and all those things. So I think there's a lot of great work that has been done over the last couple of decades to enable some of these devices. But I think there's still a long way to go, and especially we are hungry to pack more and more smart, if you will, into each catheter and drive more signals and get more data out. And so I think there's still a long way to go, and certainly people want to pack more stuff within those catheters.
The challenges and achievements make a lot of sense, and it does sound like we're going in the right direction. Maybe if we look at maybe in the next 2 to 5 years, can you give us a sense of what we might expect in terms of smart catheter innovation?
The two big areas that I see where a lot of innovation is happening, a lot of startups, even the larger OEMs are channeling a lot of their investment. One is on the electrophysiology side, where mapping of the heart and then through that mapping, how do you do more targeted and focused ablation? We are seeing a pretty big push towards PFA compared to regular ablation. And so there's that aspect of smart catheters. And then the other aspect is advanced diagnostic catheters, advanced imaging catheters. So people are trying to miniaturize sensors and trying to integrate those miniaturized sensors at the tip of the catheters. So different sets of challenges. There are definitely some overlapping issues and gaps that we need to fill, which just come from, like I said earlier, small catheters pushing IDs and ODs down every day. And the catheters need to be kink resistant. They need to be have the right tensile strength. But they need to have the right lubricity and all those typical challenges that come with the catheters. But just talking about the diagnostic catheters or the imaging catheters, working directly with sensor manufacturers and partnering with them and understanding each other's challenges. So they are developing the next line or next generation of sensors, which are more, I would say, ready to be integrated into the catheters and not just in more traditional devices, where maybe the form factor of the sensors is more longer and skinnier rather than your typical square or a rectangular form factor that typical electronic packages come in. So I think a lot of great opportunities, but I see the problem, you know, there are 2-3 different ways we can tackle the challenges coming up.
All right, then let's take it no holds barred. Let's look a decade or more from now. What is your most hopeful view of the future of smart catheter innovation?
Sure. So, I mean, this is a medtech industry, such a fast moving industry. So, you know, looking a decade ahead is almost like, you know, we haven't even probably started thinking about things that might hit us in a decade. But, you know, AI, let's just look at that. We know there's a tons of information that we can get from different parts of the anatomy. We want that data. We want to analyze that data. And then we obviously want to make smart decisions, and we want to enable our healthcare providers or physicians to make smarter decisions through that data. I think bandwidth is a problem right now. Signal to noise ratio is a bit of a problem. And I think in order to overcome these problems, we will need to move to more custom electronics or customized electronic packages. And so I think as smart catheter market increases, as the demand increases, I think a lot of electronic manufacturers are now saying that, hey, we need to come up with maybe more modular designs. Same thing with the sensor manufacturers. Modular designs, designs that allow for better wireless connectivity, less routing of wires. Flex Circuit and other substrate manufacturers are looking at how do we take out manual assembly and the challenges that come with integrating it, you know, 10 components at a time. How do we go to more monolithic batch processed components so that we reduce the issues that come with manufacturing, make the products more reliable? And I think that will allow us to get more bandwidth, will allow for more data to come out of those devices. And more data means we can use AI more effectively. And like I said, enable our healthcare providers to make smarter decisions.
Ashish Dvedia, Head of Engineering and Technology for Certiq Medical, thank you so much for joining us on the Future of MedTech Opportunities. It was really interesting to unpack the state of the union for smart catheter innovation today and what it can look like in the future. We really appreciate your time and your insights.
Thank you for your time, Kelly.
All right, now it's time for our keynote conversation. Once again, I spoke with Valeska Schroeder, CEO of Serapeutics. Well, Valeska Schroeder, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here.
Happy to tell Serapeutics' story. We talk a bit about spine here and there on Device Talks Weekly, and I think your approach is incredibly novel. So I want to unpack that. You got a really promising rewarding FDA approval lately, and I know you're starting to do some work in patients, so we can talk all about that. But before we get into that good stuff, I'd love to unpack your career and your story and how you found your way into medtech. What was the one and true thing that drew you to this fabulous industry?
The one and true thing.
That was a loaded question, I know, but
yeah. No, that's an important question. I think what drew me in was what has drawn a lot of people into medtech, which is the ability to have an impact on patients and help people. And so that was definitely true for me. I grew up around physicians. My grandfather was an academic radiation oncologist, and I saw how much they were helping their patients and also developing new treatments, which seemed exciting as well.
But you're looking at your LinkedIn profile. This is my research team. You started at HP. Is that right?
I did. I did start at HP. Yes. You did your research.
Thank you, team.
yes.
Was it a med tech orientation or were you looking at tech first? It was 2000, so you could be forgiven for getting caught up in all that.
Yes. Yeah. I was leaving graduate school, so I got a PhD in material science and engineering. Huh. And when I was leaving graduate school, all the jobs seemed to be tech. There was tech everywhere. Yeah. And so I took one of those and worked on an environmental initiative to eliminate lead from solder. But I liked the job, but it wasn't as fulfilling as having an impact on patients. And so I made a career choice to do something different.
I think there's sometimes more value in that when you're not necessarily there from day one, but you stop yourself after a few years and say, you know what? Reset. I think that's great.
Yep, that's right.
So you moved over to Confluent, which is a great supporter of Device Talk. So great company. Go Confluent.
Yes.
What you were working with Nightingale at the time? Is that right?
I was. Yeah. So it was very connected to my PhD research. The way that I came into medtech, we were working on Nightingale and working on Nightingale implants for the peripheral vasculature. And they needed to last a long time in the body. And so there are a lot of mechanical loading and there's a lot of chemical environment to worry about. And that is what I had done some research on in school. So it was a great first step on the technical side.
Well, Nightingale is clearly all the rage now. Do you have like a OG Nightingale t-shirt that you like to wear and show off that you were in early?
Well, I'll say I'm OG enough that it was called Nightingale Devices and Components when I worked there. So
that sounds like a great t-shirt. And then looking just again through my extensive research, you were with Connor Med Systems, Acclarent. I mean, these are all great startups. Did you catch the startup bug at some point and find your way over there?
Well, I did. I would say when I worked at those companies, they were at J&J. So in the San Francisco Bay Area. And I think I caught the startup bug by hearing about what everyone was doing before the acquisition. so it was great experiences working at those companies. And then I ended up leaving J&J to go to Vital Connect, which was my first startup experience.
Oh, that's funny. I forgot the time frame as when you're right. Those would have been clearly acquired at that point. So what was just the romance, the stories that people told, and I'm guessing sort of the camaraderie and sense of accomplishment?
I think all of that. Yeah. And that, you know, you're really doing something new and have a lot of flexibility to grow and learn as a team together in a smaller company that looked attractive. It was true. I had a great time at Vital Connect and then working with smaller companies since then.
That's great. And you were on boards of Aaron Medical and Intuity, more great companies, and then became managing director at KCK. How did that that seems like a pivot of sorts to go
it was a pivot. I was working at Vital Connect and stayed in touch with my mentor Greg Garfield, who was starting to talk to the head of KCK about why it would be great for a family fund to invest in medtech. And so they started making some investments and I got involved. I got involved early doing some diligence and then jumping in full time with them. And it was a great, great experience.
That's fantastic. And I see, again, you have connections with great companies like Lung Pacer Medical, yes. and Doug Evans.
Yeah, Lung Pacer got their PMA recently too. Yep. So they're doing great things.
Another great med tech story. So was there a moment where you decided you didn't want to be on one side of the board table and wanted to move to the other side of the board table and become a CEO? How did you find your way to Serapeutics as CEO?
Yeah, well, I was involved with Serapeutics at KCK. Mm-hmm. So I led the investment in Serapeutics and then was on the board about 4 years before coming in as CEO. And I would say during that time, I got closer to the company and got more excited about the future of the company and decided to transition in as CEO and work full time.
Did you always see CEO as an ultimate destination?
I would say I considered it, but I wasn't driven to that destination. But I think it felt like a good idea to be closer to physicians, closer to the product, and working with the team again. And that was what really attracted me to go back into a medtech company and be part of the team again.
That's great. So let's talk a bit about Serapeutics. It's one of those MedTech startups that have been around for a bit. We use the startup term liberally in our industry. It's about a little over 10 years old right now. When you joined, you joined in 2022, so a little less than that. What was it about Serapeutics that you saw that convinced you it was time to, again, get back into a startup?
Yeah. Well, I had been familiar with the story, obviously, as a board member, and was really excited about what was coming next for Serapeutics. And this is the product that just got approved, Pearl Matrix. We, at the time that I joined as CEO, we were getting towards the end of the enrollment period on the clinical study, and it was looking pretty exciting. So wanted to make that transition at that point. And Serapeutics, I can give you just a little bit of the background
on Serapeutics.
So the overview,
introduce us to Serapeutics. Give us some
insights. So Serapeutics is a global orthopedics company, and we're focused on drug device products to improve bone repair. We're headquartered in Colorado in between Denver and Boulder. And we have been around for more than a decade at this point. And our drug device products are used in spinal fusion procedures in the U.S. And in other geographies, we have broader indications, but all focused on bone repair. And all our products are powered by our P15 peptide, which is a drug that's unique to Serapeutics products and has been shown to accelerate new bone formation. And our first FDA-approved drug device combination product is iFactor, which has been on the market for close to a decade. And that's indicated for use in the cervical spine. So you said, where in the spine? The cervical spine is in the neck.
All right. Great. Thank you.
And fusion procedures there, and it's been used in over 200,000 patients at this point. So it has quite a history beyond the pivotal study that was used to bring it to the market. And then in July, we launched Pearl Matrix, which is a bone growth accelerator, and that is indicated for lumbar fusion. So that is your lower back. And we've already seen Pearl Matrix take off in Canada, where we had earlier approval, and we're excited for the U.S. launch at this point.
So talk a bit about P15. Is this a proprietary peptide that's your own? And what is the origin of the technology?
Yeah. So P15 is the drug or the secret sauce in our products. And it is a peptide that's naturally occurring in type 1 collagen that is in our bones. And its special action was discovered at UCSF around 30 years ago. And it was found to be osteogenic. So it helps with bone growth and has been shown first to attract cells. So P15 was taken and formulated and attached to surfaces. And on surfaces with P15, you saw a lot of cells. First, the cells just attached, and then they started moving around, and then they started releasing biochemical agents. And in animal studies, were then shown to accelerate bone growth. So it's a great peptide, a great drug that is both efficacious as well as safe. And so it doesn't grow bone where you don't want it to be. So there's no ectopic bone growth, which has been a problem with some other products in the space.
Is that, and forgive me, I don't know how these things work. Is this your proprietary peptide? Can anyone else use it, or is it belong to Serapeutics for this purpose?
It is, at this point, it isn't covered by a patent. And so we do have a lot of know-how in the manufacture of the product and how we process it that is still ours. And then, of course, there's a lot of clinical work that is also ours that has gone into it. But the P15 itself is not directly under patent.
Taking the Coca-Cola strategy, right? Locking the formula in the safe. And I've never heard of this described as a drug delivery combo. Is that how you describe it? Is that how it is described when you have an implant coated with this? Is that how it's classified?
Yeah. So it's from an FDA perspective, it's classified as drug device combination product.
Yeah.
So And so the device is the bone graft. And so the cells do like a structure to work with. And so that is the device part of the bone graft. Yeah. But we have P15 is attached to the calcium phosphate particles that the cells then attach to. So you've got both the device part and the drug part of the combination product.
I think I said drug delivery, but I use these podcasts as my own private learning experiences.
That's pretty close.
Yeah. Let's focus on eye factor. When would you need to stimulate growth in the cervical part of your spine? Has something been removed? What's happened there?
Yeah. So the patients that are undergoing a spinal fusion procedure have something wrong with their spine. For our indications, we're looking at patients with degenerative disc disease. Mm-hmm. And so you have a disc that's damaged and a decision is made to remove the disc and then ultimately replace that disc with bone. And so you're forming bone between the two vertebrae in your spine. But first the physician or the surgeon would remove the damaged disc. Then they'll put in hardware to stabilize the spine. And that really allows for bone growth. And the bone growth happens where you're putting your bone graft or the eye factor product in between the vertebrae.
Okay. And let's move down the spine and talk a bit about ProMatrix. What was the significance of this approval? Is ProMatrix sort of your future flagship product, or does that belong to your previous product? Where does ProMatrix fit into your portfolio?
Yeah. Well, I would say in the future, we see a place for both of these products.
Sure.
Eye factor for the cervical spine, Pearl Matrix for the lumbar spine. They also have different handling properties. So eye factor, the carrier for it is a hydrogel. And so you need to contain it. So it's contained within a cage when it's used.
Okay.
Pearl Matrix, the carrier is collagen based. And so it stays where you put it. In the clinical study, it was used both inside a cage, but also packed around the cage in the disc space. And so those two different properties can be useful for surgeons, as well as the two different indications. So we're excited about both products, but we do have a lot of optimism on ProMatrix. Years ago, there was early feedback on eye factor of, we'd love different handling properties. And so we feel like we're fulfilling that feedback. There's also feedback of, we would love something for the lumbar spine. So we're fulfilling that with the clinical data. And a lot of concern amongst physicians of their complex patients, their high-risk patients. And so we designed a clinical study that included more than 60% high-risk patients. And that really reflects the population that is undergoing spinal fusion procedures. And lastly, I mentioned that P15 in animal studies has been shown to accelerate bone growth. We design the clinical study for Pearl Matrix, not just to have an overall outcome of composite endpoint of superiority, but also to look at speed diffusion. Mm-hmm. And we were able to show superior speed diffusion in a clinical study with more than 60% high-risk patients. And so all of that makes us particularly excited about Pearl Matrix and the opportunity that bone growth acceleration has in the space and the impact it can have on spinal fusion.
These are the only two products I'm seeing on the website. Do you have some others down the pipeline that we'll hear about in the future?
Well, we have one other P15-based product that is only sold outside the U.S., and it's a fairly small product for us. And right now, we're really focusing on where else can we go with P15 and the technologies we have. And so we're looking, we're looking at opportunities to potentially expand our label and opportunities to work with doctors to evaluate special areas within spinal fusion that, that our product might have applicability to. So that's where we're spending our time today.
Is it all, will you be focused on the spine? Are there other opportunities for this outside in other parts of the body?
Yeah, there's definitely opportunity in other parts of the body. When you look outside the U.S., we do have broader labels. Mm-hmm. And so we have more experience outside of spine when we're outside of the U.S. And we are getting feedback of other places where bone growth acceleration can have an impact. And we are currently working with FDA on some of those potential future indications for the product in the U.S.
Are you able to talk about where your product is used outside the U.S. and other applications?
I would say generally, we do have a lot of usage in the spine outside mm-hmm. the U.S. as well. So that is a high need area outside the U.S. Other applications in trauma and in extremities like foot and ankle have come up as higher needs areas where our product seems to do well.
Okay. So what's next for you as CEO, moving this company forward? Are you shifting? I mean, you've been commercial already, but are you more commercial now? Are you shifting into kind of the scale is tilting from R&D clinical to now full ramp? We're going to sell these things. Is there a shift going on?
I would say so. I joined as CEO in 2022, mm-hmm. and a big part of what I was trying to do and what the organization was trying to accomplish before the launch of Pearl Matrix was to make that shift. So, you talked about startups and are used to the word startup. I would say we're not a startup anymore. We're definitely a small company. And that shift involves lots of infrastructure from building buildings and expanding manufacturing to, our order to cash processes and what we're doing there to our compliance programs to how we've structured the sales force. So we have done a lot of work over the last 3 years on making that shift happen. And the idea of doing it ahead of time was so that we could really focus on the launch and getting out to physicians now that we have Pearl Matrix available.
So what is your commercial, what does your sales team look like? And how do you sell in a market where we're seeing, obviously, we've seen, and there are a lot of big players pushing. We're seeing some new movement in here, some Highridge and other companies that are stepping in with existing portfolios. So the spine industry seems to be in flux a little bit with Stryker divesting its portfolio. Where does therapeutics fit into all of that? There's a lot going on.
There is a lot going on, and it has been a busy few years in orthopedics and in spine in particular. I would say therapeutics, we have an internal sales team and sales management team. We have a small number of direct reps that we're working with. And then we are in the orthopedic space where there are a lot of sales agents or distributors that are in the OR every day with doctors. And so we're able to partner with those sales agents. And that is largely how we're going to market. We do have a benefit of having a drug device combination product for fusion, which is considered a biologic bone graft. And we don't have hardware. And so this is a very special product that does not generally conflict with the other products in the bag mm-hmm. of our sales agents. And so we're able to work with them and not be in conflict with their other products. And they can offer the surgeons they're working with a really special product with great clinical data and great outcomes. And so to a certain extent, disruption in the industry can be a positive for, for a group that that can work with different parties.
Is there an opportunity for you to work with makers of implants to provide a coating of sorts? Is that part of the business, or does it really need to be delivered the way you're delivering it?
Yeah, I would say there's definitely an opportunity to provide it on as a coating. Mm-hmm. I would say the challenge is that that would still be considered a drug device combination product. And so making sure that you have enough of a market with one particular piece of hardware that, right, that it would make sense for us. So it's definitely something we think about, but have not moved forward because of some of the challenges on the size of the market versus the investment that's required. As you know, PMAs and especially drug device combination PMAs require a fair amount of investment.
you're anticipating my question again. You were a VC, so I'm sure VC's always on your mind. What are the future fundraising plans for Cerapeutics? What are your needs and what are your plans?
Well, I would say we have great equity backers in the company and on the board, including KCK. And so they have continued to back the company. We have also been working with or doing some of the funding through debt, and we're continuing to evaluate how to use that combination of internal equity and debt. But the good news is that we are pretty close to profitability. And so we within kind of plans we're putting together right now, we have that path to profitability without additional fundraising. And so I think that puts us in a really good place, because if we fundraise again, it will be because we see a great additional opportunity that we want to invest in, as opposed to needing to fundraise to run the company. So so we are in a great place as far as profitability. That's not great. Quite there, but getting there soon.
That's exciting. Final question, and it's kind of a new one. I've started asking people, if you're talking with someone who's a potential patient of your or user of your product, what do you like to communicate to those folks? Say you're at a barbecue or something, about the value of your product and why it should be considered. What do you say directly to patients?
Oh, that's interesting. So if I'm talking to a patient, sometimes the first thing they're asking me about is more of, should I do a spinal fusion at all?
Sure. Yep.
And so so to answer that question, you know, I acknowledge that you know, some people can avoid and push off spinal fusion, and if you can manage the pain in other ways, that might be a good choice. So that's usually the first half of the conversation.
That's a good part.
And then the second half is, well, if I am doing a fusion, how should I think about it? And you know, when I'm talking to patients there, it's the same as talking to investors. It's really, you know, looking at a great doctor. You want to have a doctor that has all of this great technique. Frankly, a lot of the hardware is fairly commoditized. And so if you want a difference in your outcomes, you should look for a product that has clinical evidence and a product that has shown to make a difference. And especially with Pearl Matrix, if you want to get back to life faster, you want accelerated bone growth, and you want a bone growth accelerator. And so that's the real message for patients is, if you can put off or avoid spinal fusion, you may want to, but if you're having it, you want it to be successful and you want bone to form as quickly as possible. And so that's where Pearl Matrix really fits in.
Yep. So it's a great message. And the first part of that conversation is important, as important as the second. So, I'm really glad we could learn about Cerapeutics and learn about your story. Thank you for joining us on the podcast.
All right. Thanks so much. Great to be here.
All right, well, that is a wrap. Thanks so much for joining us on this episode of Device Talks Weekly. We'll be at Device Talks West on October 15th and 16th. I hope you'll join us there again. Use the code DTWeekly25 to save 25% off the price of registration. Go to west.devicetalks.com to check out all of our great speakers. I can't list them all here, but they are doozies, I tell you. So also before that, if you're in the mood for a webinar, we've got webinars, folks. On Tuesday, we've got a special session hosted by Biomerics called Quick Turn Prototyping, Bridging the Gap Between Innovating and Manufacturing. And it's a great opportunity to learn about the potential of design for manufacturing. So go to devicetalks.com to register for that. Otherwise, make sure you just subscribe to the Device Talks Podcast Network so you don't miss a future episode of any of our great podcasts, including GE Healthcare, which will be, as I mentioned at the top, we'll be rolling out in a short time. Kayleen Brown is leading that one up. So lots of great new offerings coming to you through our podcast network. So make sure you're a part of that. And please share this episode of Device Talks Weekly on LinkedIn. And when you do, connect with me, connect with Chris Newmarker, connect with Kayleen Brown. We'd love to be part of your future MedTech conversations. Until then, we'll talk to you next week and would love to see you in Santa Clara.